Now, In Depth with Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening and welcome to the program for Friday, October 17th. It's the Federal News Countdown. The three most important federal news stories of the week. Each week, two experts in the world of the federal government make their choices for the three most important federal news stories of the week, rank them in order from number three to number one, and come in and count them down on the Federal News Countdown. This week, my experts are Jeff Neal, Senior Vice President at ICF International and the former Chief Human Capital Officer at the Homeland Security Department, among other assignments. It's great to see you, my friend. Thanks for coming in today.
It's great to be here. I always enjoy being in the studio with you, Francis.
I as well. And we have a rookie on the countdown this week, Jeff. So we have to be very nice, but at the same time, cruel but fair, I guess,
okay, that's good.
The term that Mike Causey uses. It's Keith Trippi. He is the Chief Executive Officer of the Trippi Group and former Executive Director of the Enterprise System Development Office at DHS. So it's like a little DHS reunion.
It is.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I have looked forward to having you do this since you left government, and I am very pleased that you're here. We begin where we always begin on the Federal News Countdown with...
Number three!
Keith, your choice for the third most important federal news story of the week is from Tech Times. The headline is Google pours $500 million into Magic Leap, Oculus Rift on its crosshair question mark. And I said what I sometimes say when I get results from the countdown participants. What in the world does this have to do with the federal government?
Unfortunately, not enough yet.
Okay.
And that's the point of the article. So anybody a football fan? Yes. Anybody seen the yellow line?
Yes.
That shows the first down.
Yes.
This is augmented reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's interesting about this article is a couple of areas. The growth in augmented reality is through the roof. You have Microsoft that's spent over $100 million to buy a company in this space. Facebook spent $2 billion recently. And Google just put another $500 in here. And let me put it in the business terms. So really all it does is it provides 3D objects framed against your physical reality. And then let me take it into a couple of quick spaces that you would recognize. You see a nice watch on the internet. Oh, mm-hmm. I like that watch.
Uh-huh.
You take your phone, you put your phone over your wrist, and that watch is now on your wrist. So there's one-to-one marketing opportunities where it's already being used today out in the commercial sector. Entertainment, just think of things like Avatar, right? So if you like the movie. So there's applications over in that world. Now let's pull it into the federal space. A lot of agencies go out and do assessments. TSA will do assessments on bridges. You'll have the different folks that will assess tunnels and professional buildings for compliance. This augmented reality would allow assessment folks to go out into the field, be able to take the pictures, be able to see the interior schematics, and complete their assessment quicker. Law enforcement officers and first responders, when they show up on a scene, they'll be able to actually get real-time information on in their glasses or on their pads. That's about whether there's a chemical leak for a train that turned over. You'll be able to get updated information on folks that are saying via one of the social media devices, hey, I need help over here.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll help in both mission. We can use it for telework. It'll help with training law enforcement officers. There's a broad array of applications associated with augmented reality. And I just thought this was interesting because there's a lot of money being spent in this space. How much of that could we look to bring into the federal government?
There's a lot of conversation about really smart, done by really smart people in the federal government about how to deal with technologies like this as they present themselves.
Sure.
How do we go about changing the mindset of that to a mindset of, instead of seeing something cool and thinking, how are we going to deal with that? How do we change that mindset to, that's really cool? How do we leverage that? How do we take advantage of that and apply that to our mission?
Yeah, that's a great... This isn't the shiny object in the water floating
right.
by, right?
I mean, right.
We all see the yellow line at the end of the first down. This isn't that. This mm-hmm. is, I'm a police officer, and I've got a new set of recruits that are going to go out and hit the field, and I want to make sure that I can train these individuals to be ready for a certain scenario. So, for example, this capability can set a yellow hue around individuals that may be acting suspiciously. There's a car that's driving erratically. There's a car that may be extra heavy in the trunk that the police car is following. And then you don't lose the car because it'll put a hue, if you will, a yellow hue over that car.
Mm-hmm.
So there's ways that you can take this augmented reality. There's already applications that are implemented in the commercial sector. It's more of, can the federal government bring their data together? And there's a lot of efforts around data analytics that is really a foundational piece to this model that's mm-hmm. already underway. And there are platforms that are out there. Again, back to, you know, if we were to talk acquisition,
yeah.
that is an area that we would be able to quickly get to market because there are technologies out there. We've just got to be able to harness that.
About 30 seconds. That sounds like it's a really heavily end-user-driven discussion.
Sure.
Is that the case, or is that something that decision-makers at the top of an organization will be able to do?
Well, I think the decision-makers are going to look at it and say, what effectiveness will this have on my mission? Will law enforcement officers increase the amount of bad guys that they can catch? Mm-hmm. Will we save more lives? Will we assess more bridges that may have safety issues that we weren't able to see before and measure it in the business outcomes? And if the leadership sees the business outcomes can be affected by this, that'll push its way down. And then the folks in the law enforcement are going to know that they're going to be more effective. So I think it's a top-down and bottom-up.
Keith Trippi's choice for the third most important federal news story of the week is from Tech Times. The headline, Google pours $500 million into Magic Leap. And you can read it and all of our stories from this week's countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Jeff Neal, your choice for the third most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. Nation's travel security chief Pistol to retire. What a career of service John Pistol gave to his country, and he's the kind of person that it's a shame to lose, isn't he?
He absolutely is, and that's the reason I picked this as one of my top three stories. John Pistol was an FBI agent for years. He was a deputy director of the FBI. He's been the administrator of TSA for a number of years now, and John is a great law enforcement officer. He is really an amazing human being. He's a great guy to work with. And frankly, in all the years I was in government, there were very few people I had more respect for than John Pistol. So losing him, I think, is a blow to the administration, certainly a blow to DHS. If you look at TSA, TSA has still got a number of issues. And that's kind of an understatement, probably, to say TSA has issues, particularly with respect to its workforce. Looking at the technology they use for screening, looking at a variety of issues. TSA has a lot of issues, so it needs strong leadership, and it's had that strong leadership with John Pistol. Replacing John Pistol is going to be hard for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is he leaves a pretty big hole in the organization when he goes. Secondly, who wants to be the administrator of TSA?
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly the most loved agency in the federal government. You could probably say that people like the IRS maybe a little less sometimes than they like TSA.
A little less.
And both of them, of course, have incredibly important missions that we rely on very heavily. Finding somebody who wants TSA is not the easiest thing in the world. And then getting someone confirmed is not easy. If you recall, before John was appointed, the president went through two other nominees for TSA administrator, and both of those nominations crashed and burned. So getting someone as golden as John Pistol was really an amazing accomplishment. So finding somebody, getting somebody confirmed, and what's really amazing is, you and I have talked before about the ridiculous amount of congressional oversight of DHS, where they're overseen by like 90-some committees and subcommittees and caucuses. To be confirmed, once you find somebody who wants to be the administrator of TSA, they have to go through two confirmation hearings because the Senate can't get its act together enough to decide that one committee or another will handle it. So they have to get to go through two confirmation hearings. One is bad. Two is horrible. So I think losing John is a huge loss, and replacing him is going to be incredibly difficult.
Well, and we compound that with the fact that whoever takes that job is guaranteed to lose it January 20th, 2017 at noon. So you're going to have effectively, by the time somebody's nominated, even if they're confirmed in the speediest of ways, they're going to have maybe 12 to 18 months to affect any kind of change at TSA.
Well, I think it depends on what happens with the 2016 election.
Well, sure.
It could very well be that the next president comes in and wants to keep a lot of these folks who are in really critical positions.
But how often has that happened historically? We saw it, once in the past two or three transitions with Secretary Gates. It's the only one I can remember. Maybe there were others.
Well, the other thing that was interesting, though, is if you look at the transition, even at DHS, when I got to DHS in 2009, the Undersecretary for Management, Elaine Duke, was a Bush appointee, and she had stayed on. And she was quite good. She was there for a year in the Obama administration, and Elaine was a great person to work with. So it could very well be that some of these folks will stay. But as far as what their kind of assured of having, you're right. It's about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And given how long it will probably take to get someone nominated and confirmed, it could be as little as 18 months.
Yeah, so. the 12 to 18 month window is what I'm starting to hear. People are being told, if we put you up for this job till you get through all the stuff, that's about the actual job time, work time that you'll have, is what they're telling folks.
And in an agency as large and complex as TSA, 18 months is not a lot of time to get anything done.
Here's the part of the story that I like as we wrap up on federalnewsradio.com. Shortly after Pistol's announcement, Anderson University posted a statement on its website that said a search committee will propose to the school's board of trustees that Pistol be the school's next president. The university's located in Anderson, Indiana, Pistol's hometown. Pistol received a bachelor's degree in 1978 from the university. So it's a wonderful homecoming for him, and we wish him well. Jeff Neal's choice for the third most important federal news story of the week is Nation's Travel Security Chief Pistol to retire. You can read it and all of our stories on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Second most important stories of the week from Jeff Neal and Keith Trippi when we come back on Federal News Radio.
Federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in every Monday at 10:05 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee. For your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your career retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, sponsored by WEPA, Mondays at 10:05 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. for topics and ideas that could change your future. For free information, visit NITPINC.com and WAEPA.org.
Here's Gary Buchanan, Chief of the Risk Management Division, NGA, on the Mitigating Insider Threats in Virtual and Cloud Environments, sponsored by HITRUST and Carahsoft.
It was different then because it was one server, one piece of hardware. As we move to virtualization, that changes a lot. We now have the capability for system administrators to elevate privileges, create and delete hundreds, if not thousands, of servers in a click of a button. That changes the posture of our insider threat detection.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com/insiderthreat. You've virtualized your IT infrastructure and moved to the cloud, and you're realizing the benefits. But do you know what your virtual and cloud admins are doing? HITRUST software helps agencies operate securely in the cloud and protects against insider threat. With HITRUST's automated two-man rule, encryption, and continuous monitoring, agencies can stop insider threats before they happen. Learn how HITRUST can help you know what you don't know. Visit InsiderThreatReport.com. That's InsiderThreatReport.com.
Get a first inside look into the new Congress just 2 days after the election at CQ Roll Call's Post-Election Impact Conference held November 6th. Hear from Stu Rothenberg and the rest of the Roll Call team, as well as experts from GovLoop, The Washington Examiner, The Huffington Post, and NBC News. Former Republican Congressman Tom Davis of Virginia and former Ohio Governor Ted Strickland will keynote a panel discussion, The Midterms and Beyond, a bipartisan conversation with swing state perspectives. Learn more at postelectionimpact.com.
Hey, Caps fans, head to Verizon Center Saturday, October 18th, as your Washington Capitals finish their three-game homestand against the Florida Panthers.
Skates up the right side, moves in on Clements, and he scores! That's it! Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Florida!
You'll want to get your tickets today by calling 800-745-3000 or visit online at WashingtonCaps.com.
Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington are a positive place for kids. They support the development of young people who are most in need. Hi, I'm Renthia Ross, Vice President, GEICO Insurance Company. GEICO supports youth organizations that make graduation from high school and furthering skills for work or going to college a priority, like America's Promise and their partners, Boys and Girls Clubs of America. Help a kid grow up great. Give to the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington at bgcgw.org.
Welcome back to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. This week's Federal News Countdown. features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Keith Trippi and Jeff Neal. And we are up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Jeff Neal, is from the Washington Post. It's a story headline, DHS morale sinks further despite new leadership at the top, survey shows. And I was happy to see you include this, Jeff, because it kind of goes to a point that you and I have talked about before on this program. And that is, I wonder, and you tried to convince me, and I'm not sure you were entirely successful, I wonder if just by the nature of some of the missions, at least, at the Homeland Security Department, because they're so difficult and they're so complex and they're demanding of the employees that we ask to execute those missions, if morale at DHS is always going to be problematic, especially in certain components. And I wonder what you see in these new numbers that may confirm or refute the way that you've looked at this in the past.
Well, Francis, what I'm seeing at DHS is a couple of things. Number one is this article was one in the Post that Jerry Marcon wrote. It's a good article about DHS and about morale. And it points out that despite new leadership, these problems continue to exist. And one of the things that's really important about that, and it's one reason I brought this up, this story up, is number two. One of the problems you have to look at when you're looking at changing employee attitudes and changing responses to surveys like this is it does take some time. And Secretary Johnson has not been there long enough to have made a difference. This survey was done months ago. And so he had been on board for a few months when the survey was done. And a number of the other key leaders at DHS had been on board for a few months. So I don't think it's entirely fair to point to it and say, well, look at that. You know, Secretary Johnson's been there for a while now and nothing's happened. So I think where he might have a chance to have an impact is in the 2015 survey. And so that's probably it's going to take him a while. The second thing is that DHS is a very large, cumbersome organization that was put together in a kind of haphazard way. And as a result, what you ended up with is an organization that had a lot of messiness in it. And it will take a long time for that to settle down. You will find in DHS that there are some places where it's going to be very difficult to make huge improvements in morale. And one of them is the one we were just talking about, TSA. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at what TSA does, and look at the work of a transportation security officer, those men and women are mostly equivalent to about a GS-7. So these are not folks who are getting paid big bucks. You know, where you look at CBP, for example, the CBPOs are GS-12s. So there's a huge grade disparity between the folks at and the work of the folks at TSA and the folks at CBP. Also, the folks at TSA don't have the protections of Title V, the laws that protect most federal employees. And so a lot of what they have is really at the mercy of the administrator. You know, the previous administration decided that there would be no collective bargaining. So there wouldn't be any union representation at TSA. This administration decided to allow that. The next administration could decide to turn it off again. And so TSA employees don't have the kind of certainty on a lot of things that other federal employees do. And TSA is 60,000 out of about 190,000 employees. So when TSA's numbers go down, DHS's numbers go down. Then within DHS headquarters, you have several of the headquarters components that have very challenging responses too on the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. So I think there is a problem there that needs to be dealt with. The DHS issue though is not now unique to DHS. If you look at the survey responses for the Department of Defense, look at the survey responses for the Department of Interior, look at in any of the ones that have released their results already.
VA just put theirs out today, I believe. We have that on federalnewsradio.com.
I'll take a look, because I'm writing about that for next week in my blog. If you look at those, though, a lot of the numbers are kind of showing what I would call a kind of a malaise. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not getting better. They're not getting a lot worse, except the numbers on how people perceive senior leadership. And those numbers appear to be tanking. And it's pretty consistent across agencies. If you look at a group of questions, it's like question 53 to question 62, I think. If you look at those, you'll see that they're dropping 3%, 4%, 5% from where they were last year. And those kinds of responses, to me, are a leading indicator that other things are going to get worse. If people get to the point where they simply don't trust the leadership of their agencies, then other things in the employee viewpoint survey are going to keep on going down. Mm-hmm. So if this doesn't get dealt with soon and there isn't some effective leader development being done in a lot of agencies, I think what we're going to find is that the 2014 numbers are going to be viewed as the good old days mm-hmm. in a couple of years. These are going to keep on getting worse.
Keith, in the context of what Jeff is talking about, in the variation of mission and status of employees and so on, component to component, is it fair or realistic to look at the agency overall and say the morale at the agency is at this level? Or should we de facto go to the component level and figure out what it looks like?
That's a great question. Every organization in the commercial world that does a post-merger acquisition. That's what the department is, post-merger acquisition mm-hmm. 12 plus years later.
Yeah.
And I think what we're seeing here is a couple of things at play. You have a 225-year-old culture with the Coast Guard. You have a 100-plus-year-old culture between what's CBP now and the folks at Secret Service. You have a 12-year-old culture with TSA. You have FEMA's at 79, maybe, when that got started. You have wildly different cultures that are being brought together. And there are cultures, I think, that run deeper than the DHS culture. So mm-hmm. I think the challenge, one of the core challenges is, what is the DHS culture as opposed to the eight cultures underneath it? That's mm-hmm. one. Two, what are the top five characteristics of the top 10 places that folks like to work in the commercial space? How many of them say leadership tells me, feeds me on a regular basis? I don't know if that's a priority for them. I think in the commercial space, it's freedom to work, freedom to grow, path to move up in the career, work on fun things, do something innovative. But we always default in those surveys. I always see that. And I almost think it's too easy an answer to say it's leadership. Mm-hmm. Leadership's going to change every 4 years minimum, usually, because the administration will change. Even if the administration doesn't, they may want to bring in a new person or a new secretary to run the organization.
But leadership actually is what drives a lot of an organization's culture. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey and look at how many of those questions are directly or indirectly influenced by the quality of leadership, it's a huge number. And so the vast majority of those questions are directly or indirectly influenced by the quality of leadership. And if you want to look at a private sector example and look at what leadership can do, mm-hmm. look at a company that used to always be referred to when it was written about as the beleaguered computer maker, Apple. And Apple was a company that was at death's door. And when it was at death's door, Steve Jobs came back to the company. Mm-hmm. Apple is the most valuable company on the planet. Mm-hmm. And that is a difference that was caused by leadership, by the vision of leadership, by the determination of leadership, by the smart decisions made by leadership, by a leader. So I think leadership is incredibly important, mm-hmm. and it drives these survey results. It really does, and it drives performance in an organization.
We could do the whole rest of the program on this, and maybe we should, but we have more to get to. Jeff Neal's second most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Eye and the Washington Post. DHS morale sinks further despite new leadership at the top. Survey
Francis,
shows
maybe what I would suggest, Jeff, we'll do a dueling blogs, kind of a dueling banjo.
That would be great,
because I think I have a different perspective, and I think that would be fun for our audience.
If you can do it in 30 seconds, do it.
No, I mean during the blog. We'll blog it.
Fantastic.
Save it for the blog.
We can cross-post.
I like it.
Wonderful. Keith Trippi, yep. Your second most important federal news story of the week is from Federal Times. The headline is VA Secretary Defends Discipline Record. And it leads off with something that is music to the ears of members of Congress that passed the law that we all know about. Veterans Affairs Secretary Bob McDonald says he's working aggressively to fire problem employees in his department and is frustrated by congressional criticism that dismissals aren't moving fast enough. We saw Susan Taylor this week who resigned. She termed it in the email, "I am retiring and resigning effective today," but it was on the 14th, so it was earlier this week. What did you see when you read this story that jumped out at you, Keith?
Well, you know, a couple of things, and I was in the private sector for 9 years and then served for 11 at the department or in a large federal entity. And one of the challenges that I saw was the ability to say, look, I had the opportunity to work with some of the brightest folks I've ever met before. Jeff ran a great shop over there at Chico, a lot of great vision in his group. So I would argue that you had brilliant folks that were very committed. And then he had some good employees. And on the other end of the bell curve were the folks that I felt provided a lot of challenges, needless challenges, if we could have taken some different steps. Mm-hmm. So what do I mean by that? And why does it have a ripple effect down the line? If I have a staff of 100 people in my organization, and I have 30 that are wonderful, I have another 40 that are good, they come in at 8, they leave at 5, they do their job, they don't necessarily give extra credit every day. But
they
do
don't give
job,
you any trouble.
But they're fine.
Yep.
Then I've got the other 20 to 30 that are folks that probably wouldn't make it in the private sector for a variety of reasons. And here's what ends up happening. The paperwork trail starts, and it could take 12, 15, 18 months to begin the process to move someone out. Here's the butterfly effect to that. All of the other staff and the employees say, why am I having to pick up this individual's work? Because they're not doing their job. So now I'm doing other duties as assigned. And what do we do as managers and leaders? We'll move that workload because the work has to get done, and we'll move it to some of those good folks that are working very hard. They're not getting bonused any extra. They're having to work extra hours, and they do it for the love of the mission, or they just really enjoy their job. But that does have a butterfly effect downstream that is as damaging, if not more damaging, than the person not accomplishing what their particular function is. And over at the VA, listen, I think it's I think the government can do a better job of saying if someone does something right, black or white, you do it right or wrong. And if you're stealing or you're lying or you're maliciously doing bad behavior and you're caught at that, I don't see why it would take 6 to 12 months to move someone out or let them do that. See you later. I'm retiring. Mm-hmm. There should be some actions that could be taken so folks realize that that's not acceptable behavior.
Keith knows that we're laughing because I'm sitting here looking at you, Jeff, because
I
know
too.
you're chomping at the bit. You can't wait to take that okay, one, can you?
Okay, I don't agree with Keith. Okay. And I don't agree because of a couple things. Number one is you just combine two things that are very, very different. Mm-hmm. One of them is performance, and yes. One of them is conduct.
Yep.
If you have a performance problem in the federal government, it does take a while to deal with that because mm-hmm. you're required to give the person a chance to improve. And so it can take a year or 18 months to get somebody out of the agency. If you have a conduct problem, if I find somebody falsified records, it doesn't take that long. I can propose their removal. They have 30 days to respond, or they have a time to respond. It's a 30-day notice period, and they can be gone. If somebody wants to fire somebody who is guilty of egregious misconduct, they can do it. It does require something that sometimes you don't find in people in management jobs, and that's a backbone. It does take someone being willing to do that. But firing people for misconduct is not that hard. I have done it. I have seen it done. I have helped people do it time and time again over the years, and it can be done. So So some of the stuff at the VA where people were falsifying records or doing things that were highly inappropriate, they had the mechanism for firing them already. I actually think it's kind of interesting that Secretary McDonald is saying that he's firing people as fast as he can, and he's following the law. And so he is doing what the law requires. He's doing what the expedited procedure mm-hmm. in the law requires.
Right.
So he's doing this as fast as he can. And I really desperately do not want to see this, is I don't want an agency to be able to just fire whoever they want when they want. If that happens, we're going to have a lot of problems. You've been in, you were in the federal government for 11 years,
sure.
right? I was in the federal government for 33 years, and we both saw some things happen. One of the things we saw is things happen sometimes for political reasons. If an agency were told, you can just get rid of however many people you want. You can get rid of anybody you want to get rid of. You know darn well what would happen. What would happen is some scandal would erupt, and instead of wiping out a bunch of top-level political employees, who, by the way, can be fired instantly, there is no trouble firing a political appointee. Instead of getting rid of the top-level political appointees who might have allowed a problem to develop and to fester, they would go in and they would wipe out a bunch of career employees and say, look at this, I got rid of 150 people. And they would do it for purely political reasons. It would be for the headline. It wouldn't be to make a problem better, to make it go away.
Sure.
So I want them to have to do the hard work of explaining why they're firing somebody. And we're not running, I was in government so
You're
long.
Still in the mode, man.
I'm still a we. You know, we're not running a business in the government. And there is a public trust associated with government employment that is different from what you would be looking at in the private sector.
We just have a minute or so left, Keith, to kind of build on what Jeff is saying. There is potential risk here, too, for this to turn into the French Revolution, where people get dragged to the guillotine that were totally innocent, never did anything wrong. How do you avoid that and still continue to be able to do the right kind of churn that you need to keep an agency healthy?
Great questions. And I agree, Jeff. There's a difference between the performance and there's just bad behavior, right? Let's put the bad behavior off. There's that streamline. I would argue more streamlined. On the performance side, here's the things I would do so folks couldn't just go out. SESs or PAs, political appointees, couldn't go out and just say, I decree you 100 are gone. I would set up an independent audit group that would run independent in the Chico office at each of the agencies, and they would come out and they would do it based on objectives. I think the more performance objectives that you can put into these performance plans, the easier I would hope that it would go back to be able to measure their performance to say that these folks aren't getting it done. So I would have an independent group that would go through and do that. I would set up a special organization. I know we have attorneys that are helping these folks on the removal side, but I would argue they are not a management resource. They manage to the exception, vice the rule. I would like to see this model transformed to manage to the rule rather than the exception. If the managers and the PAs are doing bad behavior, document it, remove them.
All right. The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Keith Trippi, is from the Federal Times. The headline is VA Secretary Defends Discipline Record, and you can find it and all of our stories on this week's countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important stories, the top of the chart next with Jeff Neal and Keith Trippi on the Federal News Countdown. Be right back.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by Airbus Group.
What role do U.S. intelligence agencies play in the Ebola crisis? The intelligence community appears to be avoiding getting too deeply involved in it to avoid mission creep. Besides, according to U.S. officials, their toolkit doesn't match the heavily scientific and medically oriented information collection needs of a crisis like this. Some in the intelligence community say they have a high degree of confidence the CDC can take care of its own collection needs. I'm J.J. Green.
Just overhead, an Airbus medevac helicopter races to the scene of an accident. At 20,000 feet, a Coast Guard crew searches out drug smugglers from an Airbus Ocean Sentry. Far above in space, an Airbus Ariane 5 rocket delivers a satellite to monitor water pollution. While back on the ground, a new Airbus A320 assembly line in Alabama will provide jobs for thousands of Americans. Airbus Group. We connect and protect at every level.
Are you protected from today's cyber threats? Does your agency have the tools to identify vulnerabilities and manage them over the full cybersecurity lifecycle? Check out the in-depth conversation with industry experts Mary Mayonato and Bill Kazor of SAIC, and view the online chat to get your questions answered on how to manage the cybersecurity lifecycle and stay ahead of threats. Register today and listen at federalnewsradio.com/cyberthreat. Sponsored by SAIC, smart solutions for a complex world. Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection Chief Information Officer, joins Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller Tuesday, October 21st at 4 p.m. on 1500 AM for a discussion on how CBP is moving to the cloud and mobile devices and securing its networks and systems. Armstrong will also discuss his IT priorities as they relate to Federal News Radio's exclusive CIO survey. Listen Tuesday, October 21st at 4 p.m. on 1500 AM. Survey and interview sponsored by FireEye.
The Washington Wizards are back and single game tickets are on sale now.
John Wall, the steal, the score!
Come see John Wall, Bradley Beal, and all of your favorite Wizards live from Verizon Center all season long. Don't miss out on one of the most exciting teams in the NBA right here in Washington, D.C.
Hey, this is a good one. We got a good game here.
Tickets available online, Ticketmaster.com and at WashingtonWizards.com. Go Wizards!
This hour of news is brought to you by Boeing. The EA-18 Growler is the only electronic attack aircraft in production, and we need to keep it in production to ensure mission success. Take action. Go to supportgrowler.com.
Come to the National Academy of Public Administration annual meeting Thursday, November 13th at the DoubleTree in Crystal City. This year's event, Public Administration 2025, How Will Government Adapt?, brings together federal, state, local, and international leaders to discuss and find solutions to the greatest challenges facing our nation's governments. The event features an impressive array of speakers from across government, including OPM Director Catherine Archuleta, OMB Controller Dave Mader, and officials from executive and legislative branch agencies. For more information or to register, visit napawash.org.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Keith Trippi and Jeff Neal. And we are up to
number one.
And I guess great minds think alike, Jeff. Your most important federal news story of the week dovetails with the Keith selection at number two. Yours is also from the Times Group. It's the Military Times. And the headline is, VA Secretary says, I'm aggressively firing problem employees. It's the same piece, just under a different masthead. This concept of firing people at VA is... It doesn't appear going to go away anytime soon, because the chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee in the House, Jeff Miller, put out a press release on Susan Taylor's retirement saying, hey, wait a minute, this wasn't the point. And it goes to what you were speaking about a moment ago about, is this a pound of flesh or is this an effort to change the culture and effectiveness of a federal agency? And when we see her leaving the agency, and we see the chairman of the committee who advocated this legislation saying, well, that's still not fast enough, it certainly helps us understand why Secretary McDonald turns around and says, I'm going as fast as I can.
Well, yeah, when I look at this, Francis, I first of all, I look at what is the problem we're trying to solve, and what do we want to accomplish with the VA? Do we want to make the VA better, so veterans get the benefits and the care they're entitled to? Or do we want a pound of flesh? Do we want to be able to put somebody's head on a stick out in front of the VA building? And I think what we want is we want to make things better. So, yes, there are people there who should be fired. Secretary is taking steps to fire those people. Should he just instantly turn around and fire people when they're accused of doing something? I don't think so. You need to, you still, even with this expedited authority, you need to know what you're firing somebody for. You need to know if you are getting rid of the person who created a problem, or are you getting rid of the person who is trying to fix the problem? So, and doing it, finding that out takes a little bit of time. You need to look at what's actually going on. And the idea that if I find somebody that I think did something wrong and I want them out and they quit, great, they quit. They're gone. They're not in government anymore. Does anybody think in this particular case, Ms. Taylor, do you really think she's ever going to get a federal job again? I don't think so. She almost had another one, and that blew up fairly quickly. She's never going to get another federal job. She is out of government, and that's done. And so I don't think I'm interested as much in getting blood out of wayward civil servants as I am in finding ways to make agencies perform better and to get people the benefits and the care they're entitled to. So frankly, on this one, I don't know Secretary McDonald. I understand he prefers to be called Bob, but I think he's doing the right thing here. This is a case of somebody taking measured, thoughtful steps to deal with serious problems, and I think he's doing the right thing.
This is a classic case of the wants and desires of Congress, the legislative branch, conflicting with the wants and desires of the executive branch, isn't it, Keith?
I agree. Let's just take a step back. It's Friday afternoon. Let's all think of Norm. Norm from Cheers. Where did he go? He went where everybody knows his name. Mm-hmm. If you're a vet, don't you deserve the Norm treatment when you walk in the bar? Throw out Carla. I'm not talking about Carla, but from Sam and Woody. Don't you deserve, and Coach, don't you deserve to walk in and everybody knows your name? They know what you're ordering. They know what you need. They take care of you. They talk to you. They know you. They know your family. I think one of the challenges that Bob or the secretary is going to have here is, how do I create a culture of a customer-centric organization that's at my DNA? There's no reason that someone should be able to go into Starbucks as a former vet, and Sarah's the sweetest thing, takes care of you, and she thinks you're great. But then you go into the hospital, and you don't get that same personalized sort of care. Mm-hmm. I would almost challenge, why don't we look at concierge doctor service? That is a big trend out there. You have to pay a little bit more for it in the commercial sector. But why wouldn't that just be the expectation? That's the standard that McDonald is going to set. And it starts with customer service.
But when you look at the VA has over 300,000 employees, I think. I think it's over 300. It's a massive agency. If you want to change the VA, it is going to take some time to do it. You know, you're turning an aircraft carrier. You're not turning a speedboat.
Sure.
And you're not doing customer service in a bar in a sitcom. Mm-hmm. Although sometimes Congress looks like a sitcom. So maybe it is.
Wow.
Maybe it is the same. Yeah,
that was effortless too. You just laid it right out there. But, that's great.
But I think changing the Department of Veterans Affairs is going to take some time, and I don't want to see personnel actions. I don't want to see the things that are needed to make VA a better place. I don't want to see them driven by the news cycles and what will make good ink or good electrons these days. I guess ink is going out of style.
Yeah. Jeff Neal, bada bing for him, right?
Yeah.
Jeff's choice at the most important federal news story of the week is Lee O'Shane's story in the Military Times, VA Secretary, I'm aggressively firing problem employees. The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Keith Trippi, is from EnergyStar.gov, and it's not technically a news story, but it is a concept that I look forward to understanding better. This says, the United States Environmental Protection Agency launches the first ever Energy Star Change the World story. Why do you think this is a big deal, Keith?
And sorry for going off script here.
No, there's no script.
I'm a rookie, so I can throw in these sort of random articles that may not fit the status quo.
That's
Francis.
The great part of the show, right? Is you get to pick. Right. I don't coach you at all, as is obvious by this selection. But what jumped out at you about this effort that the EPA is making as so important?
Let me personalize it and then I'll draw it bigger.
Please.
You are not going to find me petitioning for the next round of regulations to save CO2 in the atmosphere. That's not me.
Okay.
But I tell you what, if there's a product out there that has an Energy Star on it, and it's roughly the same price as another product, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to buy that. No one told me I had to buy that. I'm not buying it because I am the most energy conscious person, just being honest here. But there are a lot of people that are. And the concept, and let me bring it back up a level, the reason I like this Energy Star, this is where the government was really special. They took an item that's near and dear to their heart. Let's save money. Let's save energy. Let's not pollute the planet. And they said, do we go regulatory? Do we go hard regulations, regulations, regulations? Or do we look at a voluntary program? Do we come up with a private sector business model and implement that to achieve the results that we're looking for? And what I love about this Energy Star, it's been around since 1992. I've got some stats here. Let me throw this out. 18,000 partners, 4.5 billion units of products have been sold. 1.4 million homes are Energy Star certified, and 20,000 facilities are Energy Star certified. Great story. Okay, is this an environmental discussion? Nope. Here's where I'm drawing the parallel. For the past 4 or 5 years, the cyber attacks that are impacting the globe are only growing. There are black markets out there that trade in vulnerabilities. That's never going to go away because there's money in cybercrime and the hackivists and the state threats. That will never change. If anything, it's going to accelerate. So here's my proposal. Instead of looking at regulatory guidance to be developed, it's still not fully out there yet. There's talk about it. There's different entities, my old organization plus others. Here's what I'm proposing. Let's create a CyberStar. It's a voluntary program that companies that develop software, develop hardware, develop services, banks and others can rally behind and say, I have a CyberStar product, service or offering. So me as a consumer, if I'm looking at bank number one versus bank number two, roughly all the same, they're going to keep my money in a vault. Who's going to protect my data? And one is a CyberStar and the other doesn't. Guess where I'm going to make my decision? And I think that that's a way to voluntarily bring industry, consumers, and government together, following this extremely successful model on something that I would argue is gaining critical mass, which is cyber attacks on our infrastructure.
And Jeff, I would say what I like about Keith's thinking is that he's taking a concept the government's already executing and applying it at a different space. The administration has tried this on a number of occasions, most of them very successful. And it seems to me it's a great model to be able to affect change in a variety of different ways.
Well, I first of all, I have to say I think Energy Star is a fantastic program. Mm-hmm. And ICF has actually been working with the EPA on this program for about 20 years.
Oh, okay.
So it's something that we've been very involved in. And it's an amazing program. And one of the things that's so great about something like Energy Star is it's a multi-sector program where a variety of different stakeholders had a real interest. You know, obviously, all of us as citizens have an interest in air that's breathable. So we all want that. Energy companies, electric companies, power generating companies don't have the unlimited capacity, and so they're always looking for ways to be able to have the demand more manageable. The companies that make appliances like washing machines and refrigerators want to have sales advantages. They want to have things that can get consumers to be interested in them. Consumers don't want to have high utility bills. So lots of people have a shared interest in all the things that went into the Energy Star program. And I think if you can find areas where there are shared interests, then these types of programs can be incredibly effective. With cybersecurity, maybe it would work. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see something work with cybersecurity because there are lots of threats out there. But I think what you have to find is you have to find multiple sectors that can have overlapping interests that can drive you in the same direction. Mm-hmm. And when you can find that, you can make things happen. And the administration's actually been doing some things that are in the area of multi-sector leadership like this for the last couple of years. And I think the more we do things like that, the better off we are.
Sure.
I might challenge your terminology just in a minor way, but I think it's important because it speaks to the way that people would perceive it. I wonder if we might call it aligned interests rather than shared interests.
Because you're right. It's a better term.
Because as you threw each of those out there, none of them were the same, but but everybody was headed in the same direction.
And
so
you
that's the only suggestion.
You are absolutely right. That is a much better term than mine.
Wow.
And here's where I love this. Two minds thinking alike here. Let me add to that.
Please.
At the department or any other agency, sometimes it feels you're in the rowboat and you're paddling like crazy.
Yes.
You got someone else looking at you and they're rowing right at you. And so what do? Mm-hmm. You don't go anywhere.
Right.
Why I think the Energy Star worked is industry got behind it. They saw marketing competitive mm-hmm. advantage associated with that. Same thing on this cyber. You bring in the cyber insurance companies, that's about a $8-10 billion market, and the CAGR on that's off the charts. Mm-hmm. It's growing like crazy. They manage risk. You've got different companies that say, if I'm Target, what did Target do after they got zapped? And there's no shortage of money that Target is spending. What did they do? They set up an information sharing group of other retailers. You got trade associations that are saying, I want to protect my market, because it used to be Target would say, or Walmart could look at Target and go, tough luck.
Ha ha.
Oh, by the way, ooh, hey, they're at our door now.
Yeah.
Hey, what do we do? Now let's all get together. That's going to happen. That is forcing industry to collaborate in ways that they say, I used to have a competitive advantage because you were sloppy. Well, now they're at my door, so let's partner.
Well, people always talk about someone having a big Target painted on their back. If you go to a Target store, you know,
it's painted on everything.
There's one on everything. Right. So
it's even on the price tag.
My favorite Far Side commercial or a cartoon of all time was there was a deer standing up with a big bullseye on him, and his buddy walks by and says, "Bummer of a bullseye."
Bummer of a birthmark.
Yeah.
Bummer of a birthmark, Hal. Yeah. I remember that one.
Uh-huh. Target bullseye.
The conversation about these replicable, transferable, and the other important point, I think, is scalable things like this is not going away anytime soon either. And I think it's driven by money. We only have about a minute left, Jeff. Do you see the same thing in the future?
Yeah, I think so. And I think things like this, like Energy Star, we're going to see more things like this because there are not unlimited supplies of money to deal with problems. And you cannot solve everything through regulation, although Keith and I might disagree on the degree to which regulation is a good solution for problems.
How do you think he did for Federal News Countdown?
I thought he did outstandingly.
I think so, too.
Thank you, Jeff.
Great job.
Good to see you again.
It's nice to have someone who's got a different opinion, and we can debate a little bit, and I can help him understand the error of his ways.
Uh-huh.
So that's good.
I have spoken every confidence.
Like a man with more wisdom than me.
Wiser than you. It's a great countdown, as always. Keith, thank you very much for doing it. Really had a great time with you. Jeff, it's great to see you again, as always.